We're taking a trip down memory lane by tracing the history of art galleries in San Luis Obispo, starting in the mid-1970s. Break out the tie-dye and the bell-bottoms. Good afternoon. I am Stephen DeLuque, and you are tuned in to Ears on Art, a twice-monthly interview program dedicated to the advancement of the visual arts. Ears on Art is produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio, serving the California Central Coast from Salinas to the north and Ventura to the south. This month, co-host Krista Hewitt and I had the pleasure of conversing with Roseanne Seitz, who has co-owned an art gallery in downtown San Luis Obispo since 1986. Roseanne, along with a core of dedicated supporters, has helped form and maintain the healthy art scene in downtown San Luis Obispo for decades. Krista and I visited with Roseanne at her beautiful hillside home and studio.
Stephen and I are here in Grover Beach with Roseanne Seitz. Good afternoon.
How are you, Krista and Stephen? Good to see you.
Well, I think we're doing pretty well, and it certainly is a gorgeous day, so never hurts.
Never does. Hello.
Roseanne, you and I have had our paths crossed for a long time. How long have you lived in this area?
We moved here in 1986. It was right after my father-in-law passed away. My father-in-law and mother-in-law, John's family, lived here since, I think, 53 or 54. And when he passed away, we wanted to be closer to help his mom out. And at the time, we had been in Sacramento. We had both been teachers, and then he went to law school and became an attorney and had worked in Sacramento for 2 years. And we had three kids. I was not really happy about the move at that time because the kids were all set with their preschool teachers and babysitters and gymnastics teachers. And I was in a half-time teaching job, which worked out really well. And not all districts will allow you a half-time teaching job. And it was like, okay. And we just moved everything down. We wanted to build a house and have some property like we had had in Sacramento. We did find this lot and lived over in Pacific Heights for 2 years while we built the house. And got the kids situated with all the backup and new babysitters, because my family was backup north. They were the babysitters of choice so we could take trips and things like that. So that's how we moved here, got involved with Art Center and the Watercolor Society fairly soon after that, just mainly attending meetings and entering the Aquarius show. I had started taking some adult education art classes up in Sacramento that were pretty much non-directed. You just did things and there was no real instruction. I took one art class in college. They didn't have art in my high school. I knew I wanted to be an artist from age five. Knew also, since I was a child of Depression era parents, that I needed to have an income that I could rely on, and art was a little too much of a risk. So as soon as I got established with the teaching, started taking art classes. And then when we moved down here, it was like many more opportunities. Hillcrest Art Center in Cambria was offering instructors all year round. And I could pick a watercolor instructor who was excellent, a published one that I had read their book. I had tried all the different things they talked about. Then I got to take a class from them. Frank Webb, Jeannie Dobie. I wanted to get better at composition. I took the class from Frank Webb. He had taught in the 70s. I wish I had known of him at the time, I think back east mainly. And all of his students ended up being top in watercolor field. So I tried to take as many of those classes from those people as I could. When I wanted to get better at color, I took a class from Jeannie Dobie up at the Hillcrest. And then I also, the Watercolor Society, had one class a year, and that person was the person who was the juror of the Aquarius show. And so depending on what they were teaching and their style, I would take those too. And then the rest of the year while I was teaching, I would also then be able to practice that. And in the summer, and I had started to do shows and trying to decide if I could move into art fully and not drop the teaching, have to make that decision. It was very difficult. I had health insurance through the teaching, security. I had already taken a pay loss just moving here because you drop down on the salary schedule, you know, back and forth, months and months and months. And with John's support, finally said, okay, I'm going to move into the art and not do the teaching. So I did that gradually by taking a leave of absence from the teaching job for 3 or 4 years. And finally they said, Roseanne, we want you back. You have to decide. And so I went with the art. Right after that, then the gallery opportunity came up with Rob Rossi at the Creamery. He offered to artists who were interested, they could occupy a space for October, November, December. By the time we got in there, it was November. 25 cents a square foot to rent the space. We could do any improvements we wanted to. We had to put in our own lighting, whatnot. And we could be there for those 3 months for the holiday season. If we liked what we were doing and wanted to keep it, he would ramp the rent up. And so a lot of different groups did it. SLAG, San Luis Artist Gallery, Siobhan Sullivan with the Clay Studio. Chris August, I think, was already there, but he might have been in that group. The printmaker came over. I was with Jackie Bradley, Julie Dunn, and myself. We rented and we named it L'Artiste Gallery. Jackie is the one that found out about the opportunity first, and that was the name she wanted. And we did it, and we decided, well, we're going to keep on doing this depending on this ramp. How steep was this ramp for getting the rent up to what he wanted? And so there was some negotiation, and we ended up staying. We were there for 2.5 years. At that point, Julie and I were interested in finding a space that had a little more walk-by traffic, and Jackie wanted to stay there. So she stayed there, brought in new partners. Julie and I found a space on Higuera, right near Choro, and the art center had used it for a little bit of display space before that. Linda Lewis, jewelry artist, came in as our partner. So we moved there and started and brought in other artists, designed our gallery model on the same way we had at the L'Artiste, where we bring in artists who will pay a small rent, small commission, and that with what we were paying covered all the necessities and the basic expenses, and then anything left over we could use for advertising. After about a year and a half, the space next to us became available, and so we negotiated with our lovely landlord, Les Naiman. He and his mom, we had first interviewed with his mom to get the space. We had to pass muster with her. She was very interested in the arts and had done a lot of to support arts in the area. And then when she passed away, he took over. But he was interested also. And so he always was very generous with us to give us a decent rent that we could handle. He'd come by, check on things. He'd be friendly more than just right. A regular landlord would. So we got the space next to us. We did the remodeling, put the glass on the front, and opened up the space. And so that's what we have right now. And Julie Dunn has been my partner through all of that, 14 years together. She is a wonderful Tempur-Pedic artist. We really matched in terms of our vision for what we wanted the gallery to be and our mission, how we wanted sales to go, how we wanted to be friendly and inviting and open to all the artists that we juried in. But kind of a friendly atmosphere, and allow the artists who come in to advertise the different things that they are doing. If they're teaching classes, if they're in other galleries, no problem. And by giving them the opportunity to be on the website and the newsletter and the Facebook, because we have a Facebook person who helps us now, Rhonda LeBrane, that made it a really inviting place for artists who don't like to get involved with all those things. And that way we have longevity. We have a lot of artists who have stayed with us for a long time, and that's what we were aiming for.
Well, you're right. It certainly does speak to those things in terms of the openness, the atmosphere. Many galleries, because that is how they run, have clauses that say if you show with us, you can't show sometimes within the county, within miles, within a state, you know, whatever their restriction might be. They're certainly charging nowadays pretty conveniently.
50%.
Yeah, so they're charging 50%, and you're able to charge a lot less, but we have a booth fee that's paid right. monthly. So,
yeah, it's very reasonable.
Yes.
And 15% commission.
So you started in downtown San Luis Obispo with the galleries initially. How did you all get together? Was it just through the watercolor societies or the art center? Or?
Well, for L'Artiste, I knew Jackie, and Julie was new in town. And I think she knew Julie, and so we just met and talked and started. When we were getting ready to move up to the gallery, we had known Linda Lewis. I knew her. She's a Churchill relative. So we knew each other on a personal level and on an artistic level. And it was essential at first moving to the new space for her to be our partner, because Julie and I are both wall people, and the new space didn't have enough wall space to have a third wall person as a partner. And we complemented each other. In fact, all the partners all the way through our skill sets, we've looked for partners that, I like to do this, I like to do this, I like to do this, and it works out really well. A division of labor, but in areas that we enjoy and are more expert at. And when we do interviews like this, usually we have Julie do it because she's verbally fluent and it exudes this enthusiasm. After about 4 years and 5 years in the gallery, Linda Lewis left as a partner, and we looked around and we found Dottie Hawthorne. She started out in watercolor, then she went to pastels and then now oils. And she came in as a partner and just left last year to move up to Portland. And so we now, as partners, we have Laurel Sherry, an oil painter, and Peggy Turk, an oil painter. And both of them are outdoor painters and indoor painters, although Laurel does a whole lot of studio work. Both wonderful to work with, and they've filled in the areas that Dottie was working on.
Well, so, we're here as much to talk to you as an artist as, and we have interviewed Julie, so mm-hmm. that is in the KCBX archives. The whole gallery scenario, I think, is a really interesting one from not just your perspective and that history, but the history of what's been happening in San Luis Obispo, but also in the county for the last 35 plus years at minimum. You arrived again what year?
1986.
I arrived in 76 and got exposed to the Art Center in 77, which is when the first juried craftmaker show took place. And that was a whole interesting scenario of trying to say, there's some people here who want something more than just a Christmas sale of potholders and tea caddies. So Arnie Nyback at the time said, fine. And that started in the Watercolor Society. I know that Bob Reynolds was an essential part of getting that underway, a longtime professor at Cal Poly and watercolorist. Both of those groups would have been about the same time. The Art Center, and we're calling it the Art Center because that's what it is to us. It is now the San Luis Obispo mm-hmm. Museum of Art, but yeah. in our heads it will always be the Art Center. It certainly has had a very interesting history, and watching it develop and the struggles that we were going through during those early years in the 80s and changing over from a group that had just needed a place to show their work to people who were trying to bring in new things. And it was a lot of struggle.
You are tuned in to the program Ears on Art, produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo on California's Central Coast. Our guest this month is Roseanne Seitz, longtime gallery owner and arts activist. Roseanne shares some of her personal history and memories of the emerging local art scene.
Back to the history, my mother-in-law, Jean Seitz, was involved with Bunny McMean in the whole group that did all sorts of things to raise money to have art shows and sales. And they negotiated with the city of San Luis Obispo to rent the Otto building, which was on the site, and I guess probably some of the wood in there is still from the Otto building, for art shows from the city for $1 a year.
Right.
The city supported them after all their street yard sales, street art shows, garage sales. They really
probably
worked hard.
A bake sale or two in there, I would
yeah,
imagine.
Yeah, I would imagine. They worked hard. They got it started, and they did have local art and show that, but they also brought in some top name, nationally known
right.
people for shows when they could. I got involved with the Watercolor Society because I was a board member. We were, at the time, the Art Center, they had been audited, and they decided that with the tax people that they had to make sure more than 50% of the art shows, the efforts would go towards educating the public, and that means not necessarily focusing on members. So they decided a nice way to do it would be to have 9 shows a year, with 5 of them focusing on regional or whatever shows they wanted to bring in, and 4 would be for the art groups.
Yeah, and that audit happened because it was all volunteer-led
yeah.
for the first 30 years of its existence. I mean, an amazing feat just in and of itself to
yes.
keep a place open for 6 days a week all year round. But what fell through the cracks at one point was the filing of the property tax exemption.
Yeah.
And so it happened to coincide with a time when the state or federal government was getting excited about clamping down on 501c3s, and they said, hey, you're just a little member group. We need to shape you up. And so, as I was alluding to earlier, that did create a lot of gut-level kind of stuff with us, because we were trying to figure out, how do you honor what got you here, and how do you honor where maybe some things need to go? And so that 5-4 split was there, and then there were more than 4 groups, so then we had to rotate out.
And that wasn't a problem either.
No, it basically worked pretty well.
Yeah.
And then Beth Mott came along after some others and started an education program, which is certainly a major success for kids that's
and
know, been
really
happening.
Helps the Art Center and now the museum meet its nonprofit standards for 501c3s. I mean, you want to, your goal, I believe the goal written into their articles of incorporation were to educate the public in art, and that includes, you know, getting classes going for children and for adults.
Right, and they definitely do that.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. And the groups do that too, because they will have, at least I'm speaking for the Watercolor Society, that they had their instructor that would come in, then jury the shows, given the prizes, and it shows the public the variety of watercolor, but also what things and a judge or juror might look for.
Exactly. And that, you know, that's always raises the bar and creates its own bone of contention with people, because it's always nice to be accepted. And when you're not accepted, then the easiest person to blame is the juror, because heaven forfend that I look at myself and think, maybe that wasn't the best piece that I ever did.
Well, it's an honor to be accepted into any of the shows, and it does depend on the juror 100%. But in my case, when I first started entering and I didn't get accepted the first time or two, I would look around and say, okay, I need to, and I knew I was going to keep working on it. That was a no-brainer, but it sort of set the bar and made me more determined. And that's why I'm so devoted to the Central Coast Watercolor Society, because in my development, it really made a big difference.
And I really think that is so wonderful that those things have been available. And there's a sculpture group, a printmaking group, a painter group that uses all the materials other than watercolor, and a craftmaker group. Different ones have different strengths, and I think watercolor has probably been one of the strongest ones, and I know Craftmakers has had its problem because it's got 5 or 6 different disciplines under one umbrella, and so people go, well, that doesn't interest me, and, you know, go off and something. So it definitely created a home and a place for people to be able to do that. And then
yes.
when you think of that was San Luis Obispo, but simultaneously, during the 80s and 90s, the things that continued to blossom in North County and in Cambria and South County with different galleries, with different people teaching classes and reaching out. I mean, now we don't really even think about where would I go if I wanted to. I mean, it's available.
Yes, and I would take that back to Rob Rossi and the Creamery, because with the Slag, which had, I don't know how many artists, 50 or 60?
I think we maxed out at like 42 or something like
okay.
that, yeah.
And Slag?
San Luis Obispo Artist Gallery. It was a co-op gallery that was in the Creamery for, I think, 4 or 5 years, something like that. May have been longer.
And it was an opportunity for artists that we didn't even know were around here who might have been making art and selling artwork in other places, applying for shows and getting honors in other places, to come out of the woodwork and say, you know, here I am. It was great. But because of that opportunity, Josephine Crawford, who was with SLAG, and myself and Chris August and Firewalk Gallery and Siobhan, we started the Creamery Art Association to sort of group our money together and try to bring some advertising and let people know we were there. And one of the things we did, Gail Johnson had started Art After Dark a long time before that, but it had sort of, the enthusiasm wasn't there. People weren't doing it anymore. You know,
it takes a lot of coordination, and all you have to do is talk to Laurie at Arts Obispo to know how hard it is to pull the strings of people to get them to say, this is what we're doing this month.
So Josephine and I were working on that, especially on the Art After Dark. We were just doing it, and Josephine had all this energy to arrange for banners to be put on the trolley, for banners to be put in the town. Every month she would go around to all of the different people that were getting involved, get their information. I would go to the newspapers, the different ones, and say, can we get a free ad, please, please, please? And they would do it, but then it would only last for a year, so then you need to go somewhere else. We got it going that way. Pretty good turnout, but still the beginnings of it. In 2002 is when Julie and I moved up to the gallery at the Network and started that. And so at that point, we started the San Luis Obispo Gallery Association, which included all the galleries in the town, not just at the Creamery, and continued on working hard for Art After Dark. The Gallery Association, San Luis Obispo Gallery Association, in a way to raise funds to do the advertising and carry out the program before it was passed on to the Arts Council, we did a Jack House Art in the Garden for about 5 or 6 years. We worked with the city, Park and Rec. They provided the Jack House and manpower for the day of the event. Display areas were provided for them so that any artist who didn't do outdoor shows would be able to participate. And then a percentage of the sales went to the Gallery Association to pay for the ads for Art After Dark. And a lot of hard work. Turned out to be a lovely event. And also, we put together a brochure with the help of Eric Wand. He did all the graphics. We and the city worked with Betsy Kaiser. We took pictures and collected pictures of all the public art in the town and put together this brochure that had the public art and the galleries together. So we have to thank Eric Wand because he donated a lot of time and effort into that project and really looked at it as his baby, I think. He very much supports the arts. It was a lot of work, and we weren't being paid for any of this, and we didn't have extra time creating our own art and running the art business and getting involved. So we went to the Arts Council and said, you know, this is in your purview of what you do and your mission statement, you know, would you like to take this over? And we did some negotiations, and they did. I do want to say that with the Art After Dark, when we were getting it going again, the one thing that I was very adamant about was that any artist who wanted to participate in it could, by finding a venue in the downtown area. It wasn't just going to be available to artists who are already in galleries or already showing someplace. Needed to have that overall available to everybody. And then the public could see, you know, what was going on. And the ones who end up not having the quality that was going to be interesting to a lot of people, they would be able to work with that. Or in many cases, if their artwork showed personal feeling or statement, they had the opportunity to show it. And maybe it's not a saleable thing, but it's a very personal thing, and it's a very artful thing.
Right.
I think the other wonderful thing about that approach was also the fact that then art started to show up in all sorts of places, whether it was a restaurant, a hair salon.
A lot of retailers downtown now participate in Art After Dark.
And so it just becomes, oh, I wasn't expecting that when I walked in the door. And as you say, it isn't necessarily that everything is just being snapped off the walls, but it is creating atmosphere and is creating a showcase for people. And if they're taking the initiative to go find a place that will help them do it,
more power to them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in a way, we are almost to Josephine Crawford's vision of Art After Dark. She envisioned the arts, but also music and dance. And we do have that periodically involved in the whole thing. And the restaurants getting involved, you know, coming down, seeing the art, having a meal, that was part of it too.
It's really interesting how the entire downtown core just, I won't say leapt on the bandwagon. It was a slow crawl at the beginning. It took a lot of convincing for a lot of the businesses to become involved, but it's huge now.
It's huge.
We do Art After Dark at this store maybe 3 times a year, and we'll have 200 or 300 people come through the store on those evenings, and it's just amazing.
And a lot of young people in our gallery. We just had it last Friday, and we got a lot of tried and true members that come through. We get a lot of new people. The tourists are aware of it. And we get a lot of young people coming through, young couples, young groups, Cal Poly students. And they are not just coming in for the food.
Though some of us do. Arts Obispo, which is the name of the County Arts Council, does do the coordinating for this, and the restaurants, stores, whatever that are in it, do pay a fee to them so that...
To manage it.
To manage, right. I mean, so basically it's, you know, not a profit-making thing at all, but it enables a way to sort of say, okay, we've got some control over kind of how to publicize, because if everybody's just doing it, they're not going to be known to anybody. So in exchange for that yearly kind of business membership, then every month the list comes out. As you say, it's on...
But they can just do it for one night, one
Right.
Art After Dark, too, and not do the whole year membership.
We will continue our conversation with Roseanne Seitz on next week's show. Roseanne was also one of the participating artists in the recently completed Slope Show at the Morro Bay State Park Museum of Natural History. This Friday, as part of Art After Dark, is the unveiling of the Central Coast Sculptors Group Rhinoceros Project. This installation in the McMean Gallery is a collaborative effort between 12 individual artists. The installation will be on exhibit until March 27th. Visit sloma.org for more information. There are still tickets available for Arts Obispo's annual dinner dance fundraiser, celebrating 35 years as the San Luis Obispo County Arts Council, on Saturday, March 12th. Back to the Future is the theme this year, and you can find out all the information for this event at artsobispo.org. This event is one of the major sources of income that help fund the many programs that Arts Obispo sponsors. My name is Stephen DeLuque, and you have been listening to the first half of an interview with artist and gallery owner Roseanne Seitz. Ears on Art is produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio, serving the Central Coast of California. For co-host Krista Hewitt, we would like to thank all of our listeners and supporters. Here's hoping you have a pleasant afternoon.